Our first case for argument is Muscarello v. Winnebago County Board. Mr. Reardon.
May it please the court, my name is John Reardon, Jr., and I represent plaintiff appellant Patricia Muscarello. Plaintiff owns three farms next to the proposed wind farm in Winnebago County. They were zoned AG, which is agricultural, as was the wind farm.
Before, what does she grow on at this farm?
Your Honor, I have to admit, I really don't know.
We looked in the record. I'm sure you're right that this is zoned AG, but I didn't see where she actually put in anything indicating that.
Your Honor, perhaps I can address that.
No, I mean, it's just it's a little odd that it's not nailed down. Why do you think that the Winnebago County officials... let me put a different question to you. Once they enact the new ordinance after new process, what could possibly be left of the procedural side of your due process claim?
You're talking about the text amendment to the...
Right, this new ordinance that they have, the I know you all have these like terms, but they the ordinance is replaced in September of 2011.
Well,
right, and there are new hearings and new notice and new everything.
But that's not a record at all, Your Honor. That was just we've had no factual opportunity to respond to that.
You don't think that it was enacted? Can't we take judicial notice of the enactment of a law of Winnebago County?
Your Honor, that was never considered by the district court, we should have the opportunity to address that with the district court and bring the facts to bear that we would so that we could respond to that.
But what response would you have? I mean, if your complaint is about lack of procedure, the remedy is to give one procedure. But now there's been there have been hearings, and there's been a new ordinance passed. I'm not talking about the substance of it. I'm only talking about your procedural points.
I understand your point, Your Honor, but I haven't...
Do you think they didn't pass a new ordinance?
Oh, they did pass a new ordinance,
Your
Honor.
And do you think there were no hearings on it?
There were hearings on the ordinance, yes, Your Honor.
Okay. No, go ahead.
All right. Before the ordinance at issue, the wind farm required a special, and I do want to address that, Your Honor, especially because this is a different kind of ordinance. Before, there was a special use permit in place where you had to get a special use permit, and there were hearings on the siting of a wind farm in Winnebago County at a particular location. Now that this text amendment has been passed, it's permitted use, which means that they can be placed anywhere in the county. There will be no hearing.
But are you suggesting that there must always, I don't know, I don't think this is coherent, but that there always have to be special use permits for what? I mean, suppose the state just said, you know, we love wind farms, so anyone who wants to put up a wind farm can put up a wind farm. Is that illegal?
Well, there is an Illinois statute that specifically says that there should be a public hearing before the siting of a wind farm in
what end?
So that people can, I assume so that people can bring their concerns.
This ordinance was illegal because it, because there's a statutory requirement of special use permits, is that what you're saying?
Well, we have contended that.
Is that what you're saying?
Yes, Your Honor.
That's one of your...
That's one of our contentions, Your Honor.
That the ordinance violates state law.
Yes, Your Honor.
But what I don't understand is that under this new Article 10, there are all sorts of hearings before any wind turbine or wind farm can be actually implemented. And I guess at a broader level, my understanding of your argument is that you think Mrs. Muscarello, or any individual in Illinois, has some kind of property interest in a given zoning scheme, a scheme perhaps that has special use permits. But it's quite clear that people don't have any property interest in any given zoning scheme. The only time there might be some legal claim from a change in zoning schemes is if you actually cross the line into a regulatory taking. But otherwise, if the state or the municipality or the county or whoever it is with the power to zone changes the system, then that's a legislative act, and they're allowed to do that.
Yes, Your Honor, but we're entitled to due process regarding legislative acts.
Are you?
Yes.
What kind of due process do you get when the General Assembly of Illinois passes legislation?
Well, none, Your Honor, but this is...
All right, and so why is the county
There's an Illinois
board
statute that specifically says that procedural due process and substantive due process apply at all stages of a... It's 1220 55 ILCS 5/5 1220.
Well, you're claiming that federal law, primarily, as I understand it, that federal law has been violated, and the procedural due process standards of federal law are governed by the case of Matthews against Eldridge, which sets up a very flexible system. And I really return to my first point. Whatever may have been the issue with this original ordinance, once it's passed with new public hearings and it's completely replaced, I have no idea what relief you think this court could give you that would make any difference.
Well, Your Honor, first of all, I was going to launch into arguments under Illinois law primarily. This is a diversity case. We pleaded in count 5, procedural due process under Illinois law. And Illinois law is very clear that an ordinance that passed without the required procedures such as notice and public hearing is void. And so
if the old ordinance is void but it's off the books anyway, let me come back to my question. What do you imagine this court could do since new public hearings and a total replacement of that old, perhaps void ordinance have already happened?
Well, Your Honor, I think it's improper for this court to take judicial notice of this ordinance without giving us any opportunity to,
can always take judicial notice of the law.
You can take judicial notice of the law, but there could be facts regarding the procedures leading up to the law and that sort of thing that we've had no opportunity to address, Your Honor. We're never of record in that district court.
That it? Okay.
I guess I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Ms. Ho?
If it please the Court, Your Honor, I'm Sarah Hoey, and I'm appearing on behalf of all of the county defendants, which are the Winnebago County Board, the Winnebago County Zoning Board of Appeals, their respective chairman, and the Winnebago County Planning and Zoning Officer.
Have the companies appeared? There are company defendants here.
There are company defendants, and their attorney, Clay Lindsay, is at council table and prepared to answer any questions you should have for him, but he has decided not to argue because in reading Judge Capalla's decision, he did not see that Judge Capalla addressed any of the arguments.
They didn't file a brief, did they?
No, he did not file a brief.
Okay.
So what I don't understand about that, I mean, I had a slight concern about the finality of the judgment. So Judge Capalla, you think, resolved all issues with regard to all parties, but nobody seems to have followed up on the company defendants, including plaintiff.
Your Honor, I think that all kind of plays into a little bit of what you were addressing with Mr. Reardon. What the county did is the county passed an ordinance that in order for anyone to have a wind farm enacted, they had to apply for a zoning clearance and a building permit. No one has ever done that. No one had ever done that at the time of Judge Capalla's decision, and no one has ever done that to date. So to be talking
what are
about
these companies doing in the case then?
The companies are Navitas was the company that applied to have an ordinance drafted that even provided for wind farms in Winnebago County, because prior to that, there was no ordinance in Winnebago County that even used the term wind farm. And while Mr. Reardon seems to be arguing that there could have been a special use under a general language concerning what a special use is, there was no specific language that says a wind farm.
What relief is Muscarello seeking against the companies, since they are named as defendants?
That has been unclear. I believe that was the entire point of Mr. Lindsay's brief, that they were really should not have been parties to this entire litigation.
Well, whatever dispute she may have with the companies, it seems, I realize this is not your problem in a way, but it seems isn't ripe if they haven't taken the
next
steps.
I believe that is exactly correct, and I believe that's also true about part of her complaint is for nuisance and trespass, and that's kind of preposterous since not a single wind turbine or wind farm has been constructed. How a trespass or a nuisance could be occurring on her land is very unclear. And
no, she's just nervous about the whole thing.
I believe that's it. I believe she is anticipating what could potentially happen because
I'm nervous about a lot of things, but I haven't thought of a lawsuit yet. But
and see, Your Honor, I think the real evidence of this is one of the parties named in this case, Whispering Prairie Winds, LLC, the county had never heard of until I showed my clients plaintiff's amended complaint, because no one with that name had ever filed anything. And for that matter, the county only knew of Gamasa because at the original ordinance hearings, when Navitas, the applicant for the petitioner for that original ordinance, mentioned their parent company, they had identified Gamasa as their parent company. But other than that, the county had no dealing with them. Now, in the subsequent ordinance, it turns out that Gamasa has, over time, taken over the job of what was their subsidiary, Navitas, so then the county was aware.
Or interact with these zoning ordinances. If the county granted the requisite permits to a windmill company and it put up a wind farm, and suppose it really caused damage to Muscarello's farm, would she be able to bring a nuisance suit, or would the fact that the construction operation had been permitted, would that be
I believe that she could bring a nuisance suit, and I believe if my understanding of Illinois zoning law is that if she found that they had violated the law that the county had passed, she wouldn't have to wait for me, the county's attorney, to take action against the companies. She could take action herself.
No, what I mean is a private nuisance, you're saying. Suppose the ordinance simply allows wind farms, and the wind farm is built, and then she complains that noise and electrical interference and what have you, taking away her air, her wind, are satisfy common law and nuisance standards. So would she be able to do that, or would the ordinance or would the permits somehow be a defense against a nuisance suit?
Your Honor, I can't say I'm an expert in that area of law, but I believe she could still bring a nuisance suit on that basis.
So don't you think it depends whether she would, asserting that it was a public nuisance, which might be overridden by the permits, versus a private nuisance, in which case if there was some particularized harm to her property above and beyond what the public is suffering, there might be a private claim. Illinois law must say something about this. I feel like, you know, people engage in permitted uses all the time, and occasionally they're nuisance suits.
Right. I believe that you have stated the situation here.
But let me ask you a different question. In substance, these two ordinances are about the same.
That is correct.
So to the extent that I'm not sure if Mrs. Muscarello is bringing a substantive due process claim. The pleading makes it look awfully procedural, but let's suppose she is. What do you understand Illinois law to require as a matter of substantive due process? Because it seems it's quite different from federal law.
I believe Illinois law requires her to have notice, which she definitely had notice of
but
the second.
But that's procedure, right? That's not substance. Does she have? I'm just not clear how the state law draws the line between a procedural due process entitlement and a substantive due process entitlement. There's a case, the LaSalle case, that lists all sorts of factors that courts are supposed to look at, which are somewhat more substantive.
Yes,
so
you're right.
Know.
I believe the LaSalle case, I believe, lists, I think it's 8 factors, and I believe there is a later case that expands it to 10 factors. But
okay.
Those factors.
Sure.
we can expand it to 12.
Missing those last two.
Okay. Excuse me. And I believe those factors are all talking about basically the harm to a specific property, but this is more public nuisance, as weighed against the benefit to the public.
So whether a particular land use that's permitted is arbitrary, is that the question?
Right. If it's arbitrary and capricious.
And then we find out if it's arbitrary by things like the existing uses and the extent to which property values are diminished and so on.
That is correct. And also weighed in there is the benefit to the public versus the harm to the individual is all part of what gets looked at. And
now, does Illinois law have a principle under which courts would defer to legislative choices? Is this just plenary review by a court? Do we like wind farms, or is this
no? I believe
something different.
My understanding of Illinois law is that legislation is considered presumptively valid, but that can be overcome through litigation. So I always explain it to my clients. When I first walk into the courtroom and I'm representing the legislative body, I'm a step ahead, but there's always a chance it can be overcome by showing that it is arbitrary and capricious, that it severely damages the individual's property rights.
Can you cite a case where that's been found, where we can see that this burden has been met by a challenger? I'm just wondering how often it happens.
Let me put a related question. So when you're talking about suing to protect your property, there are takings for public use governed by, you know, just compensation. There are regulatory takings for public use. There's nuisance. And then there are takings without a public use, which violate due process. That is, because there's no public purpose. what's left for substantive due process invasion, substantive due process violations involving property? That's what I understand. The county isn't trying to take her farm. All she's complaining about, I think, is the possibility that some private user of neighboring property would cause damage, which would be a basis for nuisance if it wasn't state authorized. But is there somehow, I mean, that would be, I think, how it would be analyzed in federal law, but is there something in Illinois constitutional law that adds another way in which you can complain about a harm to your property or potential harm or future harm? Or
actually, Your Honor, I think that you have covered them all. I think that yes, you can file a nuisance suit against the person you feel has created the nuisance and is damaging your property. And that, I believe, is the remedy.
Okay, well, thank you, Ms. Hoey.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Reardon, how much time does he have? 2 minutes?
I wanted to respond to a couple of points.
Oh, wait, let Ms. Hoey sit down.
All right. Sorry, Your Honor.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honors ask for a case that has involved Illinois substantive due process. I cited one in my briefs. It's Rob Brock against County of Piatt. It's a 2012 Illinois case, and essentially what they did is analyze the arbitrariness of the action in relationship to the LaSalle factors that were already
referred to. The arbitrary action here is what?
The arbitrary action here is the passage of the text amendment without and basically and taking away our right to a hearing. I mean, essentially,
what does that have to do with that sounds like a procedural complaint.
It does.
A typical invasion of substantive due process if the government came along and took her farm and said, we're not taking it for a public use, we're just taking it because we don't like you, okay? We're going to give it to our pals.
Well, essentially,
that would be an invasion of her property rights, okay? Now, now maybe Illinois law has a different conception of substantive due process with regard to real property.
Illinois does have a broader view of substantive due process and harm to property.
But you didn't argue substantive due process in your complaint. You keep talking about her procedural due process rights being violated.
Well, I think in count 5 of the complaint, we did raise arbitrariness. It's probably not as heavily pleaded. We also raised procedural due process in that. We did not appeal the nuisance count, by the way, the denial of the nuisance count.
Well, but in count 5, it says, in denying her rights to due process and the issuance of the public notice and during the public hearing violated Section 2 of Article 1 of the Illinois Constitution. And count 4 is a facial challenge based on procedural due process. It's pretty obscure.
Well, perhaps we could have been more plain, but we believe we did allege a violation of substantive due process in count 5.
Where did she get, or you get, the idea that wind farms cause damage to agricultural uses? Is there a literature on this, or is this some kind of fantasy?
Well, there were facts presented at the public hearings regarding
facts
this.
Facts based on what?
Has
this been studied, this issue, or is this just some paranoid fantasy?
Well, certainly I don't agree that it would be apparent.
Well, what is the basis for it? Well, is there literature? There are
literatures.
People have looked at this and they're terrified of wind farms because they're going to blow the plants down. Or
one thing that's involved.
Birds that somehow help the farm. I don't know.
In essence, it will be more difficult for certain agricultural.
But are there studies? I mean, what Judge Posner is asking you, was there expert testimony? Are there any studies? Has the Department of Agriculture of either the state or the federal government
We didn't get to do any of that. I mean, our complaint was dismissed on the pleadings.
You happen to know? I mean, before you bring the lawsuit, though, you want to make sure that Rule 11 actually requires you to make sure that there's some basis for thinking that rights like that have been violated.
Yes, Your Honor.
But you haven't looked into whatever literature there might be.
Yes, there is literature on that sort of thing, yes.
Is it cited?
It's not cited in this,
well,
no.
Couldn't you cite it? Couldn't you say that something in there? Or what's a predicate for the lawsuit?
Well, we felt we were stating a claim under.
Well, you're stating a claim based on what? What factual situation are you concerned about that will cause problems?
I mean, for one thing, there's literature that shows the effect of wind farms on.
Where is this literature, and where would one find it?
I would ask.
Have you looked at any of it?
I have looked at some of it, Your Honor.
What is it from? Is it from?
I would ask leave to file some kind of brief with the court about that.
Remember.
I don't remember, Your Honor.
Because what's strange about it is that windmills, this is a very old technology. I mean, not for making electricity, but, you know, for grinding up, grinding corn and so on. And it's been it's very old, and it's always coexisted with agriculture, right? The windmills are.
Well, Your Honor.
They're grinding corn, right? So they're reaping and they're putting the windmill and they're grinding it.
Yeah, if I could respond, though, Your Honor, these are not the kind of wind farm you see in those agricultural pictures.
We know exactly what they look like. They're all
huge.
Over northern Indiana.
Yes. Yeah,
go round and around.
What do they call the windmills?
Wind turbines,
they're called. They rotate very slowly in these wind farms, right? Just like an old-fashioned windmill. Okay, well, thank you very much to both counsel. We'll move on to the next case.